Reading in Srimad Bhagavatam, Canto 2, Chapter 1, the first step in God realization is text number 11. This text has a purport, two pages of purport, about the offenses against the holy name, actually. So maybe I think we'll break it up a little bit. Otherwise, sit here and read the whole thing. I'm sure what our attention span is around here. Anyway. Translation. O King, constant chanting of the holy name of the Lord after the ways of the great authorities is the doubtless and fearless way of success for all, including those who are free from all material desires, those who are desirous of all material enjoyment, and also those who are self-satisfied by dint of transcendental knowledge. Srila Prabhupada's report. In the previous verse, the great necessity for attaining attachment to Mukunda has been accredited. Shan Mukunde Mati Sakti. The result of chanting is achieving unflinching faith in Mukunda, the giver of salvation. There are different types of persons who desire to attain success and different varieties of pursuits. Generally, the persons are materialists who desire the fullest extent of material gratification. Next to them are the transcendentalists who have attained perfect knowledge about the nature of material enjoyment and thus are aloof from such an illusory way of life. More or less, they are satisfied in themselves by self-realization. Above them are the devotees of the Lord who neither aspire to enjoy the material world nor desire to get out of it. They are after the satisfaction of the Lord. So here, these three kinds of people who are mentioned in this verse, nirvidyamananam, ichatam, and yoginam. So three categories. Ichatam, those who desire all kinds of material enjoyment. Those are the karmis. And then yoginam, those who are on the transcendental platform and aloof from material enjoyment. And then he says, above them are the devotees of the Lord. Nirvidyamananam, completely free from all, who neither aspire to enjoy the material world nor desire to get out of it. I think that's maybe nirvidyamananam, maybe I have them reversed. Yoginam may mean the devotees, and nirvidyamananam, those who are the self-situated transcendentalists. I'm not sure, actually, which is which. Maybe, yeah, it could be the other way around. Anyway, so but anyway, that's the three groups, whatever which one is which. Above them are the devotees of the Lord who neither aspire to enjoy the material world nor desire to get out of it. They are after the satisfaction of the Lord. In other words, the devotees of the Lord do not want anything on their personal account. If the Lord desires, the devotee can accept all sorts of material facilities. And if the Lord does not desire this, the devotee can leave aside all sorts of facilities, even up to the limit of salvation. Nor are they self-satisfied. Okay, so nirvidyamananam are the devotees, because he calls the yogis those who are self-satisfied. Nor are they self-satisfied, because they want the satisfaction of the Lord only. So that's the three categories. There's a verse later on, the second canto, akama, sarva kama, va moksha kama. Those who desire moksha, those who desire all material facilities, and those who are desireless. So this is a similar structure, talking about so in each case they're denoting the same three groups of people. That is to say, the karmis, the jnanis, and the devotees, karmakanda, jnanakanda, and upasanakanda. So, and again, this is the same recommendation for all these groups, actually. What is recommended is chanting. Or devotional service. In this verse, Srila Sukadeva Goswami recommends the transcendental chanting of the holy name of the Lord. By offenseless chanting and hearing one of the holy name of the Lord, one becomes acquainted with the transcendental form of the Lord, and then with the attributes of the Lord, and then with the transcendental nature of his pastimes, and so on. So here's the sequence. You notice here, this is the sequence of realization of Krishna, which comes from offenseless chanting. And the sequence is nama, rupa, guna, lila. Do you remember that? And he says namadi, name and so on, the Lord's name and so on. It means these things are all there in the name, actually. And when there's the name of the Lord is chanted, then there will be acquaintance, direct acquaintance by transcendental perception of the Lord's form. Then more and more of the Lord's qualities will be disclosed, and then the Lord's pastimes, which then includes all his relationships and so on. So this is like a bud that unfolds, display a full-blown flower. This is what happens. So he, Prabhupada, says here, one becomes acquainted with the transcendental form of the Lord, and then with the attributes of the Lord, and then with the transcendental nature of his pastimes, and so on. Here it is mentioned that one should constantly chant the holy name of the Lord after hearing it from authorities. Where does it say that? Here it is mentioned, he says. It's in the word anu, nam anu kirtanam. One meaning of anu is after someone, anu kirtanam. So constant chanting of the holy name of the Lord after the ways of the great authorities. So here Prabhupada, in his translation, he takes this little anu, two syllables, and after the way of the great authorities, that's what's intended. As he knows from the commentaries of the charges. This means that hearing from the authorities is the first essential. Hearing of the holy name gradually promotes one to the stage of hearing about his form, about his attributes, about his pastimes, and so on. And thus, the necessity of chanting of his glories develops successively. In other words, the chanting about the Lord may simply begin with the name, but then that will develop into discussion about hearing about the Lord's form, and then the Lord's qualities, and the Lord's pastimes also. It says it develops successfully, promotes one to the stage of hearing. According to Srila's Sri Sukadeva Goswami, this process is recommended not only for the successful execution of devotional service, nirvidyamananam, but even for those who are materially attached, ichitam. According to Sri Sukadeva Goswami, this way of attaining success is an established fact, concluded not only by him, but also by all other previous charges. Namanu Kirtanam. This is, I understand this, and so have all the previous acharyas. Therefore, there is no need of further evidence. See, where does he say this is no need of further evidence? Nirnitam. Nirnitam. Nirnitam means settled fact, decided truth. That which is, you know, it's like the status of, you know, one equals one. Certain basic things that nobody is disputing anymore. Although that's been disputed. Anyway, this is settled fact. Ascertained truth. Nirmita. The process is recommended not only for the progressive students in different departments of ideological success, but also for those who are already successful in their achievement as fruitive workers, as philosophers, or as devotees of the Lord. In other words, it is the way of success, the akuta and bhayam, free from all doubt, fear, for everybody, those who are after something and those who have attained whatever they're after. Still, you don't stop. It's, in other words, Prabhupada is making the point that chanting is both the ends, the means and the end. One of the more distressing dualities of the material world is the difference between means and ends. This is what gives a certain majority of our activity the obnoxious character of being work. That I have to do one thing, work. This is the means. And the end is entirely different, money for enjoyment. So you have work on the one side, which is the means, and enjoyment on the other side, which is the ends. So imagine the world in which there were no difference between means and end. That work and enjoyment were one and the same thing. Isn't that what everybody wants? In other words, you get paid for having a good time. Or you know, your work is so self-fulfilling that it becomes what you do, to make you, you know, your work is just self-satisfying. Well, that's devotional service, actually. And when there's full realization of what devotional service is, this distinction between the means and the end is annihilated. Srila Jiva Goswami instructs that chanting of the holy name of the Lord should be loudly done. There it is, right in the early pages of Srimad Bhagavatam. It should be loudly done, according to Sri Jiva Goswami. Even though at one point in our movement we had an advocate of silent chanting, because I'm sure there's some authority that says it should be better to chant silently. There is, I forgot who it is, some acharya, one of our acharyas, recommends silent chanting. Jiva Goswami here recommends loud chanting. Did you know that? What do you do when the one authority says silent is better and one authority says loud? Well, you can understand that under certain circumstances and conditions, loud chanting is good. And for other people, other circumstances, other conditions, silent chanting is good. So, who decides? The person that makes the determination is the acharya, is the expert. The Prabhupada is described like that. Imagine a physician. There's a particular, people have a particular disease. And he's got two bottles, two kinds of medication. One is silent chanting, one is loud chanting. He has to decide which is best for the patient. He picks, he chooses, and he says, here's Prabhupada's decision. See? So why do we need somebody to come along a few years later and reverse that decision? They're no better than Prabhupada. Anyway, there's where it is. Did anybody ever raise this question? Because now I know in ISKCON no controversy ever dies. Somewhere somebody keeps it alive to bring it up again later. So please remember, Canto 2, Chapter 1, Text 11, Prabhupada said, loud chanting. Srila Jiva Goswami instructs that chant, so, and you'll wonder, you say, yeah, Prabhupada says, and then somebody says, well, Sanatana Goswami or somebody, I don't know who. Maybe it's even Jiva Goswami in another place, for all I know. I don't remember. Anyway, whatever they say, here it is. And that's why we go by what Prabhupada says. The chanting of the holy name should be loudly done, and it should be performed offenselessly as well, as recommended in the Padma Purana. The list of the 10 offenses against the holy name comes from the Padma Purana. One can deliver himself from the effects of all sins by surrendering himself unto the Lord. One can deliver himself from all offenses at the feet of the Lord by taking shelter of his holy name. But one cannot protect himself if one commits an offense at the feet of the holy name of the Lord. So notice this sequence. Notice the difference between sins and offenses. You take shelter of the holy name, you can be delivered from you can surrender, by surrendering to Krishna, you can become free from all sins. Aham tvam sarva papevyo. You surrender to me, I release you from all sins. So parallel to that, one can deliver himself from all offenses at the feet of the Lord by taking shelter of his holy name. Because what will stop us from surrendering to Krishna is offenses at the feet of Krishna. So to get rid of the sins, we also have to get rid of those offenses against Krishna. To get rid of those offenses against Krishna, we have to take shelter of the holy name. One cannot protect himself if he commits an offense at the holy name of the Lord. Where do you go from there? So that's why it is important, Prabhupada stressing the importance for us because we are, our process is to cultivate the holy name. By cultivating the holy name properly, we become free from offenses to Krishna. Therefore, we can surrender more and more in Krishna. We can become free from all sinful reactions and so on. Such offenses are mentioned in the Padma Purana as being 10 in number. So here's another place now where Prabhupada discusses in brief the 10 offenses. That's another 2.1.11. If you want to know where the 10 offenses are discussed by Prabhupada. The first offense is to vilify the great devotees who have preached about the glories of the Lord. The second offense is to see the holy name of the Lord in terms of worldly distinction. The Lord is the proprietor of all the universes, and therefore he may be known in different places by different names, but that does not in any way qualify the fullness of the Lord. Any nomenclature which is meant for the Supreme Lord is as holy as the others, because they are all meant for the Lord. Such holy names are powerful as the Lord, and there's no bar for anyone in any part of the creation to chant and glorify the Lord by the particular name of the Lord as it is locally understood. They are all auspicious, and one should not distinguish such names of the Lord as material commodities. Now notice how Prabhupada discusses this offense here. So usually we say to consider the names of the demigods, like Lord Brahma or Lord Shiva, to be equal to or independent of the name of Lord Krishna. So one way of seeing that that offense is to consider the Lord as a name of some, consider the name of someone who is not Krishna to be equal to Krishna. But other thing is to consider names that are actually names of the Lord to be not. So where people are saying something like Allah or so on, that you say, no, that's not, won't get you there. So that's how Prabhupada is. In other words, Prabhupada is making a preaching point. And the preaching point that Prabhupada makes is that people should take to the process of glorifying the Lord. And if by some local name, whether it's Jehovah or Allah, would you please chant that name, if that's the name of the Lord, or that's the name by which you denote the ultimate source of all energies, the supreme controller. Now, where this can get a little tricky is that all the names of the demigods are originally names of Krishna. Like, this Prabhupada mentioned this when the devotee was being initiated in London, and Prabhupada gave him the name Ravindra. And the Prabhupada said, who is Ravindra? And you heard the devotee say, the sun god Prabhupada. Prabhupada said, no. He said, it is Krishna. There is only one god. But it's also there in Vedanta, Baladeva Jibhushana, that all the names of the demigods are actually names of Krishna, but because they have some borrowed potency from Krishna. So that's why, for example, Agne Nayasupatarai Asman, in the Isha Upanishad, Agne Nay, so like it says, O Agni, do you think this person is praying to the demigod, Agni? No. Prabhupada says, O my Lord, powerful as the fire. He's addressing Krishna, but with the name Agni. So it's not even exactly the name. It's who you intend by that name. Because people have asked me, there's a rumor going around ISKCON, that when Christians or Jews are saying Jehovah or Yah or whatever, the real pronunciation is Yahweh, that aren't they really worshipping Brahma? Because the activities described in the beginning, you've heard this, right? The activities described in the beginning of the Bible, in Genesis, in the beginning the Lord created the heaven and the earth. That's the activities of Brahma. So therefore, you know, the Christians and the Jews are all demigod worshippers. Well, be careful. On the same principle, because in one sense, the activities of Brahma are the activities of Krishna. Who is actually the creator? It's actually Krishna. Yes, Brahma is his local agent. So you could as well ascribe it to Krishna as you could to Brahma. It depends on what. So it depends upon the realization of a person who's saying these names. And in the fourth chapter of the Bhagavad Gita, it's described how that a karma kanda sacrifice performed in knowledge becomes jnana kanda. the same sacrifice of the same mantras to all the demigods and everything as a fruit of performance can be done in an entirely different way according to the realized level of the performer. It is not that the performance will necessarily change. So we just have to be a little careful. This is one aspect. Of course, usually our problem is people are demigod worshippers and think that it doesn't matter what you say. They misinterpret the whole thing. Or they're Mayavadis, and they don't understand that Shiva is a different personage than Krishna, that Brahma is a different person than Krishna, and they're not all the same. But on the other hand, the name Shiva, which means auspicious, is actually Krishna's name. So you could say Shiva, and you could mean Krishna. It's a fact. One name that when people, a lot of times they see the name Maheshwara, they think that's Shiva. But Krishna says, Saravaloka Maheshwara, I'm Maheshwara. And the Svetashvatara Upanishad, which is quoted all the time by Prabhupada, the Lord is described everywhere as Maheshwara. And so people say, well, you know, that's a Shaivite, they're talking about Shiva. They're not talking about Krishna. Anyway, I just want to make that point. So here, Prabhupada, this is another side of this offense. Is to be sectarian about the name Krishna. We like that name, we're partial to the name for various reasons, but to be sectarian, to say, you know, that other people who are maybe actually be addressing the Supreme Lord by some other name out of our tradition is also an offense against the name. We don't turn the name of the Lord into a material commodity. The third offense is to neglect the orders of the authorized charges or spiritual masters. Notice Prabhupada puts it in the plural there, because one should not see one particular spiritual master as a solitary entity. He is who he is by virtue of where he comes from. The fourth offense is to vilify scriptures or Vedic knowledge. The fifth offense is to define the holy name of the Lord in terms of one's mundane calculation. The holy name of the Lord is identical with the Lord himself, and one should understand the holy name of the Lord to be none different from him. In other words, this is how it works. It works because why does chanting of the holy name have its effect, its efficacy? Its efficacy is that it is identical with Krishna. Any other thing, it increases the production of endorphins, it activates the right side of your brain, and blah blah, you know, whatever the latest theory is by materialists is offensive. The sixth offense is to interpret the holy name of the Lord. The Lord is not imaginary, nor is his holy name. There are persons with a poor fund of knowledge who think that the Lord to be an imagination of the worshipper, and therefore think his holy name to be imaginary. This is talking about the Mayavadis, of course. Such a chanter of the name of the Lord cannot achieve the desired success in the matter of chanting the holy name. This means it doesn't matter what you chant, it all amounts to the same thing. There's this Buddhist story about, you know, a hound's tooth, if worshipped with veneration, will emit light. Somebody thought they had a relic of the Buddhist tooth. You know the story? It's a Buddhist story anyway. Somebody, it's a typical sort of a tale. I hate to say it in Bhagavatam class, but Anyway, somebody was going on a pilgrimage to India, to Gaya, the Buddhist place, and his pious grandmother said, please bring me back a relic of the Buddha. How especially she had her heart set on one of the Buddha's tooth of the Buddha. So coming back, the guy realized, I forgot. And he sees on the ground a dog's tooth, and he picks it up and brings it to his grandmother, said, this is the Buddha's tooth. And so she was so pious and everything, she worshipped this dog's tooth with great piety and devotion, and it began to glow with a spiritual penumbra. And so people came from miles around, and a great shrine was there for the glowing tooth of the Buddha, which had miraculous healing properties and so on. It was a dog's tooth. Moral, a hound's tooth at worship or veneration will emit light. So that's a Mayavadi story. You should know that. So people will say the same thing, Coca-Cola, 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 or whatever, will have the same effect. I remember the Beatles used to put out a Christmas message every year, and one year they said, Merry Christmas, Merry Christmas, 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 Merry, Merry. But the name Jesus is in there anyway. So maybe it's that's a bullshit. I wasn't amused by that, but the seventh offense is to commit sins intentionally on the strength of the holy name. Intentionally, deliberately. In the scriptures it is said that one can be liberated from the effects of all sinful activities simply by chanting the holy name of the Lord. One who takes advantage of this transcendental method and continues to commit sins on the expectation of neutralizing the effects of the sins by chanting the holy name of the Lord is the greatest offender at the feet of the holy name. Such an offender cannot purify himself by any recommended method of purification. In other words, Prabhupada wants to explain it again, because it's such an important point. In other words, one may be a sinful man before chanting the holy name of the Lord, but after taking shelter in the holy name of the Lord and becoming immune, one should strictly restrain oneself from committing sinful acts with a hope that his method of chanting the holy name of the Lord will be give him protection. I think sometimes this can be a little subtle, that one may commit a sinful activity, not deliberately, because there's a callous way of doing it. I'll go out and have a few beers and chant and, knock off the reaction. But there may be a little more subtle way of committing this offense, but just thinking, if I suffer too much, I can always go back to Krishna consciousness or something like that. That could be a more subtle form of this. And that if one thought, if I commit this sinful activity, just imagine if I could then never chant afterwards what I still committed. So we may find that is there subtly. Another way Prabhupada describes this offense, he says one should not enlist the holy name in one's sinister purpose, or one's sinister purposes, or one's sinister activities. It's to help us become free from sinful activities, and if we utilize it to increase our sinful activities, where do we go from there? What's going to save us? The eighth offense is to consider the holy name of the Lord and his chanting method to be equal to some material auspicious activity. There are various kinds of good work for material benefits, but the holy name and his chanting are not merely auspicious holy services. Undoubtedly the holy name is holy service. That is to say, it is pious by side effects. But he should never be utilized for such purposes. In other words, you will get the results of all pious or karma kanda activities from chanting the holy name. But don't do it for that reason. That's just a side effect. You've performed all sacrifices. that's already stated, Shravanaya Kalpate. That's all been accomplished by one who's chanting the holy name of the Lord. But don't use less. So undoubtedly the holy name of the Lord is holy service, by which he means pious activities, but should never be utilized for such purposes. Since the holy name and the Lord are of one and the same identity, one should not try to bring the holy name to the service of mankind. So one should not chant for good weather, or turn it into a rain dance. Sometimes one can be tempted, especially when there's a great deal of material distress. Let us pray for that the famine is lifted, or the drought disappears, or the earthquake doesn't come. The idea, so again, Prabhupada elaborates on this, the idea is that the Supreme Lord is the supreme enjoyer. He is no one's servant or order supplier. So don't chant for a... Somebody used to tell me, when I'm driving around my car and I'm chanting, I always find a parking place. Okay. But you start chanting for parking places. Now that's really beneath the dignity of the Holy Name. Because I'm sure this guy was actually, chanting for parking places. And I can understand that. But it should be done. Still wrong. Yeah, in any downtown area that doesn't have ample free parking. And I can see people coming to park here for Sunday feast. They wonder why God is not providing parking places, and they go away. Similarly, since the holy name of the Lord is identical with the Lord, one should not try to utilize the holy name for one's personal service, for my parking places, or for parking places for all mankind. Whatever. The ninth offense is to instruct those who are not interested in chanting the holy name of the Lord about the transcendental nature of the holy name. If such instruction is imparted to an unwilling audience, the act is considered to be an offense of the holy name. So one should see that a person has got is not a hostile person. There's some interest. One should like to see that little preliminary shraddha there. If not, go away. It is said in the Bible that one should not cast pearls before swine, or give what is holy unto dogs. So if they're really hostile, they're not interested at all, don't waste your breath. Because actually you'll be offending the holy name. They'll just mock it, or... The tenth offense is to become uninterested in the holy name of the Lord even after hearing of the transcendental nature of the holy name. The effect of chanting the holy name of the Lord is perceived by the chanter as liberation from the conception of false egoism. False egoism is exhibited by thinking oneself to be the enjoyer of the world and thinking everything in the world to be meant for the enjoyment of oneself only. The whole materialistic world is moving under such false egoism of I and mine, but the factual effect of chanting the holy name is to become free from such misconceptions. So, this is Prabhupada, this is usually stated as not have complete faith in the holy name, or to maintain material attachments even after understanding so many instructions on this matter. So this means that one has not really serving the holy name properly if one thinks that after that this holy name will not take care of all my problems. See, if I'm chanting and I maintain a material attachment, and you notice that it's very important, you can be chanting and have material attachments and not be committing this offense. And the point is when we have non-negotiable material attachments. I'm going to chant the holy name, but there are certain material attachments that I am not going to give up. And my insistence is that either that, you know, if this material desire isn't fulfilled, I'm going to stop chanting. Or usually that I chant plus do something else. I have divided attention. So one that understands the holy name, one should understand that when the holy name is achieved, everything else is already, will be accomplished. One has to have this confidence in the holy name. So that's why these are two sides of it, not to have complete faith in the holy name of the Lord, on the one side. Or that translates into maintaining material attachments, even after understanding so many instructions on this matter. So if I've been chanting for a while and I lose interest, it meant that somewhere along the line, this has been there, that there's been some material thing that I want independently. I still have not even put that up on the auction block. So if we have our material desires, they may be there, but we should be desirous of ridding ourselves of them. And in fact, when we chant the holy name, the equivalent of saying, Krishna, please engage me in the service, it's equivalent, that is to say, it's logically deducible, the corollary of please engage me in the service is please disengage me from the service of Maya. So when you chant the holy name, we should be praying to become free from all material desires. And we should not take some material desire and say, Krishna, this I have to have. Then we're committing, we don't have complete faith. Okay, any questions? Yeah? Yeah. Well, you know, if these people did very actually, the holy name can also take care of all that stuff too. Actually, you can place a different mantra on every part of your body, but you can also place the holy name. I mean, and actually, I think the Narayana Kavacha just does that, as I recall. If you're just putting names of chant, another way of chanting the names of the Lord, I don't mind that. I mean, that's okay. It's not a separate thing. But Prabhupada said, you know, that basically we chant the holy name and we chant Gayatri. Is Gayatri necessary? Well, Prabhupada says, actually the holy name alone is sufficient. But the advantage of Gayatri is that it will help one to chant the holy name better. Huh? So the judgment is, will it help me chant the holy name better? Just because I don't have enough faith in the holy name and I think I need a whole bunch of other abracadabra to make up for the deficiency of the holy name, then that would be offensive. Okay? Yeah. Hey, Guna. Lila. NRGL. Yeah.
So is it that there will just be discussions in the various topics, or will it be physically revealed automatically when you're talking about
it? Yeah, they'll be automatically revealed. Yeah. And when it says there should be discussions, that one one's emotional interests will be engaged more and more in that successive way. We also sometimes discuss all these things. Of course, we discuss the Lord's pastimes at the very beginning, but gradually one's emotional interests will be engaged in these things, and with increased, ever-increasing intensity. Yeah. There you go. Yeah?
It's more expensive thinking that when you see that the rains are irregular and all these things, not to be accepting that you're just chanting the rain or regular rain, but just to recognize that somehow or another we're not sufficiently engaged in society and in any problem.
Yeah, that's right. These are, they are symptoms of not chanting.
Yeah.
That's
so
right.
Yeah.
Yeah. No, that's all right. That's all right. There are all kinds of material benefits. Every single material benefit flows from chanting the holy name. We have to know this because, you know, people say to us, you know, what will happen in the world if everybody just chants? We say, great, all your problems will be solved. But we don't chant to solve those problems. That's the side effect. Yeah, I think we have to stop now. I'll go as proper.